All right, parents, it's back to school time, and I've got a secret for you. There's a drama-free way to make vitamins part of your kids' morning routine. Little Critters Gummy Vitamins. You see, my kids think they're just eating fun, delicious gummy bears, but little do they know, they're getting essential nutrients for their health and development.
Mom, we know they're vitamins.
As I was saying, kids absolutely love, and apparently know, these are vitamins. Little Critters is the pediatrician-recommended kids' multivitamin gummy brand, and the yummy way to start the school year.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. If you want to find me online, Ryan Recker Radio, it's right there. Joining us now is a national spokesperson for Gun Owners of America, Luis Valdez. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you, Ryan. It's such a pleasure to be on your show. And I just got to say, I love what you guys do. You are a shining beacon of liberty in these dark and troubled times, my brother.
There's a lot of problems out there. I don't know if you saw yesterday, Vice President Kamala Harris doing the town hall meeting. You know, I don't even know if that's called a town hall meeting. Doing this, the Oprah cosplay, perhaps, might be a better way to put it. But she was asked about guns last night. Can I play a clip for you and get your reaction? This is clip number 18.
I'm a gun owner. Tim Walz is a gun.
I did not know that.
If somebody breaks in my house, they're getting shot.
Sorry. Yes, yes. I hear that. I hear that.
Probably should not have said that. But my staff will deal with that later.
Yeah. All right, Luis. So you heard it. Hey, she's pro-gun. Everything's great. Don't worry about it, right? If she wins the presidency.
You know, the best simple statement for that is laws for thee, not for me. She, as a senator, as vice president, as the attorney general of California, as a prosecutor, her entire political career has been pushing mandatory storage laws, gun restrictions, permitting schemes, gun-free zones, magazine capacity bans, purchase to permitting, permitting to purchase schemes. I mean, the idea that she said, oh, well, you know, if you break into my house, I'll shoot someone. That's not what she's pushing on the everyday American. She wants it to be that we have to get an eye scan on some safe that's digitally controlled by the police. And the police could say, well, we're not going to unlock the safe for you. Good luck with that. She wants to literally push mandatory fleeing policies. You know, here in Florida, we have stand your ground. She doesn't want that. She doesn't want Castle Doctrine. She wants the policies that literally says you have to flee your own home if you're attacked, and the only way you could defend yourself is if you have no avenue of escape. You know, in law enforcement, I call that evidence, and that evidence is pointing to the fact that she's anti-gun. She wants to disarm you and me, no more, no less.
I'll mention, Oprah's from Chicago. You'd be a fool to not own a gun and be from Chicago, number one. And the other side that we're seeing is this softer stance. Hey, I'm not about banning guns. Oh, don't you know that I'm actually a very pro Second Amendment person? And you go back and you look at the way she voted when she was a senator. You couldn't get more liberal, literally. You could not get more liberal. And we know what kind of liberal policies are being pushed by those type of senators, and they are not friendly to gun owners. So I don't know. I don't think she's fooling a lot of people. She might. Maybe she wants to sound tough when she's not. But either way, it's scripted and it's phony.
It's beyond scripted and phony. I've seen better acting come out of the Soviet Union's Politburo, where they claim that Soviet citizens were a free people. I mean, the North Korea's Congress has more freedoms going on and is less scripted than that interview was with Oprah Winfrey. And even the fact that Oprah is from Chicago. Remember, Chicago up until recently was a gun-free zone. You couldn't legally own a handgun in Chicago for decades. So the idea of oh, well, I'm from a place where people own guns. No. Tim Walz, yeah. Walz owns a gun. The same way Fidel Castro owned a gun. Castro, when he took over communist Cuba, the country my family fled from, the first thing he said was, Armas por qué? Guns, why? The government will protect you. But here's the funny thing. He enacted gun control. He disarmed the Cuban people. While he himself, he loved to go bird hunting in Cuba. And Tim Walz is the same way. He loves to go hunting. But he doesn't want you or I to have the ability to defend ourselves from some scumbag that breaks into our home and threatens our family.
I think what you also find is they use the term assault weapon very liberally, in the sense that they use it as a term that in their definitions, in their mind, would probably include every gun. So if you open up the door and say, oh, we're going to do an assault weapon ban, and that it sounds like, oh, yes, that's right, we're going to get rid of those really scary guns that hurt a lot of innocent people. If you go down, I guess, the Kamala Harris route, and let's say she is successful with something like this, then they're going to define assault weapon as a handgun. They're going to define it as pretty much any weapon, and using that as the way to unilaterally go and erode Second Amendment protections. And this is why you got to call out the phony when you hear it.
You know, as a student of history, we just had the 20th anniversary of the expiration of the Clinton assault weapons ban. And the leading all up to that, they weren't just going after AR-15s and AK-47s. They were going after handguns. Back in the 1970s and 1980s, the thing that all the gun grabbers were going after was handguns. Then they went after long guns, because back in the 80s, you had cities starting to pass gun control that literally said, hey, you couldn't own a handgun in Chicago. You couldn't own a handgun in Washington, D.C. You want a handgun in New York City, you got to pay $1,000. You got to be politically connected to get a permit just to own. So in their mindset, back in the 1980s, leading up to the 1990s, they already had handguns under control, and they were now targeting long guns because that wasn't as controlled. But now they're just going after everything. They claim a Glock is an assault weapon. They claim an AR-15 is an assault weapon. Heck, they claim a standard Remington 870 shotgun, one of the quintessential, most common duck guns, is an assault weapon. You go to Oregon and Washington, you now have the Ruger 10/22, the ever most common 22 plinking rifle, where millions have been made. That's now an assault weapon. They will literally claim the very muskets that our revolutionary forefathers used to fight off the British are assault weapons. Heck, I wouldn't even be surprised if they claim that a rock and a slingshot is an assault weapon.
You know, it's funny. I just want to hone in on, and this is an old argument, but I'm going to bring it up anyway. When you say assault weapon, just try to apply that to other aspects of the Constitution. And if you were to say, that's assault language, meaning what you say hurts people's feelings, so you should be prosecuted or you should lose the ability to have free speech because that language is assaulting people, or your faith is assaulting people, meaning that your deeply held religious beliefs may be offensive to some other people because you believe in traditional values or biblical values. So thus that assault faith needs to be taken out, in eroding more constitutional protections because you're calling something scary, when in reality, it means nothing, because if you put assault in front of anything, it's scary. So, of course, you're not for that. So now we're going to have to try to ban these sort of things. I know that guns are an easy target because people use them in illegal ways that are damaging to other people. But you also have to take into effect in the Constitution why those protections are there for you as the individual to begin with, and why you shouldn't have to surrender it back to the government, because you know what happens when you surrender your constitutional God-given protections back to the government, and we should be fearful of those things. However, what we're finding is this rhetoric from a lot of people like Kamala Harris that make it very easy for you to say, well, the government knows what's best for me, so I'm going to yield to it. And that puts you down a path that I'm telling you, you don't want to go down. And I'm guessing you've lived it.
I could tell you this. You hit the nail straight on the head. And if you look at history, if you look at every totalitarian regime, communist Cuba, Nazi Germany, communist East Germany, the Soviet Union, China, Vietnam, North Korea, Venezuela, all of these countries have something in common. They've all outlawed the common people to be able to own firearms. And then what happens is they outlaw their freedoms of speech, their freedoms of religion. The Second Amendment, it's the canary in the coal mine. When you see a politician treat gun rights a certain way, that lets you know how they're going to treat all of your other inalienable rights. And here's the other thing. The Constitution, the government doesn't grant us rights. The Founding Fathers understood that. And if you read the Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers, they even went back and forth on even having the need for a Bill of Rights. And the idea behind the Bill of Rights was the Anti-Federalists said, look, we need an enumerated list of rights that are so crucial, so important, that the government knows not to violate these rights. And that's why the Second Amendment is there, not because it grants us those rights. It simply enumerates a right that existed even before the Constitution was penned and drafted. And that's the honest truth. These are rights we're born with. And the fact that Kamala Harris, that Tim Walz, and that politicians all across the country on local, state, and federal level want to disarm the American people, that sends a loud and shocking message. And that message is they want to put us back on the political plantation, or worse, they want to put us in political gulags and unmarked graves.
You call it common sense, though. I mean, are you against common sense?
I'll give you common sense. As a 15-year veteran law enforcement officer, you know why criminals are criminals? Here's the shocking news. Because they break the law. Mm. Last I checked, murder's been illegal since Hammurabi. That doesn't stop anyone. You can pass all the gun control laws you want. Criminals don't care. They're going to break the law. All these laws do is they hurt the law abiding. No more, no less.
Let's talk too about, there's so many problems that we're running into in this country. We have the problem at the southern border. Our economy is not doing great because people are still hurting based on this 20% inflation we've seen from Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. It seems like in any other, I guess, election cycle, this would be a bigger deal. It doesn't seem to be a something that's brought in the forefront. You hear Kamala Harris also bringing up abortion and her support for abortion. These are things that are pushed in front of the Second Amendment. Normally, this is something that would get a lot of publicity. Does it surprise you that it's not getting as much talk this time around?
Well, it's not that it's not getting talk this time around. It's that in the span of a 4-year period, you had 22 million Americans become first-time gun buyers. The Wall Street Journal just even did a story on the largest growing segment of new gun buyers. It's liberals. Even the left has realized that when seconds count, cops are minutes to an hour away. And I'm not trying to besmirch my fellow brothers and sisters that wear the badge, but it's the honest truth. When seconds count, cops are minutes to an hour away. And as we've seen in places like Parkland, Florida, and Uvalde, Texas, they're literally hours away, and it leads to mass casualties. We've seen law enforcement across the country pull back from enforcing laws and putting hardened criminals behind bars. We've seen state attorneys and district attorneys refuse to prosecute multiple muggers and shoplifters and organized retail muggings and robberies. And all these criminals, they're let loose. There's a revolving door policy. So the American people, they've been stocking up for the last 4 years saying, you know what, I'm on my own. It's like the good old days in the Wild West where, yeah, the U.S. Army, the cavalry, they might be coming over the hill, but that's going to be days from now. I'm on my own.
All right, so Gun Owners of America, if people wanted to look you up, where can they go?
Gunowners.org, and if you want to follow me, it's Real FL Gun Lobbyist on Twitter, X.
Say that one more time.
Real FL Gun Lobby at X.
All right, what does FL stand for? Florida?
Florida. I'm the Florida State Director and National Spokesperson for GOA.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Yeah, it's interesting the way these things come up state by state and some of the different laws that are proposed state by state. So I'm up here in Michigan, and we have some, pretty liberal lawmakers that push some pretty anti-gun legislation through there. But, state by state wise, are you concerned by...
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
All right, parents, it's back to school time, and I've got a secret for you. There's a drama-free way to make vitamins part of your kids' morning routine. Little Critters Gummy Vitamins. You see, my kids think they're just eating fun, delicious gummy bears, but little do they know, they're getting essential nutrients for their health and development.
Mom, we know they're vitamins.
As I was saying, kids absolutely love, and apparently know, these are vitamins. Little Critters is the pediatrician-recommended kids' multivitamin gummy brand and the yummy way to start the school year.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hey, what's going on in some of these states?
In some of these states, I'm very much concerned as a Floridian. I used to be quite jealous of states like Michigan and states like Colorado and Oregon and Washington. These are all states that, for example, have open carry, that they never had waiting periods, things that we here in Florida, even under a Republican majority, we still have. We still have an open carry ban. We have mandatory waiting periods, and we have Republicans that are pushing gun control. We're suing them, by the way, on that. But on a state-by-state level across the country, I really fear for the states that I used to be jealous of, because now I see what's happening there. And of course, it's happening by Democrats. But here's the honest truth. In some states, you have Republicans that have been willing to bend knee to these Democrats and join in voting these gun control edicts into law and disarming their own citizenry, their own voter base. And that's scary, because they just figure, you know what, if I bend knee and if I capitulate, I'll stay in office and I get a little bit more padded on my pension. And that's quite a scary thing, because, yeah, the Democrats historically have been anti-gun, but that you now have a Republican cohort helping these Democrats to get these gun control bills across the aisle.
Yeah. Luis Valdez, national spokesman for the group Gun Owners of America. Thanks for talking about a very important issue. It's very timely, given that it was just in the national spotlight last night. And appreciate your time.
Thank you. And as I said, it's always a pleasure, and love what you guys are doing.
Joining us after the break, an attorney for the Pacific Legal Foundation, Wilson Freeman. Some concerns about how DEI is rearing its head into government organizations. We're going to take that after the break. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in. Wow, it's almost the weekend. We are so close to the weekend. Joining us now is Wilson Freeman, an attorney for the Pacific Legal Foundation. Welcome to St. Louis. Wilson?
Hi. Hi, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
I wanted to talk to you about this because I wanted to learn more about it. So what is going on with government agencies and DEI practices?
Okay, so what we're doing in this case is the Federal Communications Commission, the FCC, they're the main regulator for all radio stations, television stations in the country. All right, and they have this rule, this new rule that they put out, which is actually the resurrection of an old rule that was struck down by a court almost 30 years ago. This new rule is going to require all television and radio station licensees in the country to submit a report to the federal agency, which is going to go up on the federal agency's website, detailing the race and gender report for all their employees at their station. We think this practice is unconstitutional for a bunch of reasons, and some of the same reasons that the policy was struck down 30 years ago. I think the FCC is just trying to do something that courts already said it can't do. So that's why I'm talking to you today.
Yeah, and I remember it was during the Obama administration, so it's been a little while, that they tried something similar. They wanted radio and TV newsrooms to essentially declare and have surveys of the beliefs of the people inside. They wanted the ability also to like monitor newsrooms, be able, I mean, literally listen into newsrooms. Do you remember when that was going on? And that became such a big deal that there was enough pushback to say, yeah, no, we're not doing that. That eventually it went by the wayside. There's been other instances in the past, you know, going back to Obama. Now, of course, FCC, we're looking under a Harris-Biden administration that have done similar things where they've tried to intrude on broadcast operations.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, this is not new. The FCC's role in trying to control, you know, television and radio broadcasters goes back, you know, to the foundation of the agency. Here, what they're doing, this is about so-called diversity, right? I mean, that's what it's really about. And that's what they say that it's about. It's about encouraging radio stations, or forcing radio stations, rather, and television stations to have diversity. But the way that they're doing it is so blatantly unconstitutional. I mean, essentially what they're going to do is, or what they're trying to do, is use public pressure, right? Because they're taking these reports, putting them up on the website, attaching them to these radio stations. And this is how, I mean, this is how it used to work in the 90s. And before that, when this policy was first in place, before a court struck it down. So it's yet another way to, you know, sort of use race and focus on race and to use that to kind of drive America apart.
Now, from a legal standpoint, you know, they ask you those questions when you're onboarding or you're trying to apply for a job. Like they say, you can voluntarily give it. They don't, I don't think it's ever a requirement, but they say you can voluntarily tell us about these things. Or in some cases, they may say, you know, are you part of a, you know, Native American or, you know, some of these other things, tribal. They ask these questions. And a lot of times this data is collected by employees. Where does the legal aspect come into this? Where do you cross a line legally?
Well, so it's a great question. There's a lot of different government requirements about, well, there's not a lot. There are government requirements about reporting the race of your employees, right? And the way that those typically work is if you have a company that's got more than 50 employees, you got to report your employees' races and genders to the federal government. And the way that that works is mostly, like you say, self-reporting. The employees are supposed to report their race. However, employees, if they opt out of that, the government says that the company is just supposed to guess. They've got to guess, right? So even if you do, on one of those forms, opt out of putting your race down, you know, you say, I choose not to identify, you know, you're free to do that. But ultimately, what's going to happen is when your boss makes his EEO report, he's going to have to essentially guess what your race is. Now, what's so bad about what the FCC is doing is they're greatly expanding that program, and they're attaching it to all radio stations, no matter how big or small they are. You know, that only applies to big companies, and they're attaching it to all radio stations, no matter how big or small they are. They're saying, you know, it doesn't even matter how your employees identify, too. This report says they're just supposed to engage in a kind of a visual identification. So they're really putting these small companies, like my client, the Dove Media, who's challenging this in the Fifth Circuit, you know, they're really putting them in an uncomfortable position. They've got to go and just kind of guess at their employees' races and genders and put it on this form. That's the FCC's program.
So I'm going to give you some scenarios, and you can tell me if this is far-fetched, but this is what comes to mind. So in places like Canada, you have the government that gives large amounts of money to broadcast entities, and they use that as a way to, you know, maybe control's not the right word, but they use that as a way to say they're invested in you. And a lot of times these companies that accept this money feel the pressures, maybe not they feel the pressure to be more complimentary towards the government, because otherwise they don't want to lose a revenue source. I think that it may be something they won't admit, but I feel like in the background, they understand they want to stay in business, so they have to tread lightly there. In the United States, let's say hypothetically that you start to put these things down on paper and the government looks at it. Is that a way the government could then later discriminate against entities that aren't diverse enough, meaning they would use this data in a way to make decisions based on, well, this organization versus this organization? Well, we like the stats on this one better than the other one based on what they reported, so we're going to go with this one, essentially opening up the door for discrimination of broadcast entities.
I mean, you're cutting right to the heart of the issue. That's exactly what the government was doing. prior to the program being struck down. They would say your license is effectively contingent on what they called an effective EEO program. And if you didn't have the right numbers, well, they would hold on to your license. So they would put you through a lengthy, a lengthy enforcement proceeding. Now, how they're trying to get this program through, because courts have said federal government, you can't do that. You can't hold back people's licenses on the basis of whether they're discriminating on the basis of race, because that violates the Constitution. So now the FCC is saying, well, okay, we're going to collect this data, but we cross our hearts, promise we're not going to use this data to hold back people's licenses or to put them through enforcement proceedings. We're just collecting it for our own information, to put it online and to maybe make reports about it. But we don't think that's a really plausible sort of explanation. We don't think that's a promise which really holds much value, because everybody knows that that's how it used to work. Everybody understands that this information is a source of public pressure and a source of and something the agency can and will look at. So we don't find it terribly plausible, the government's promises that they will not use this information against broadcast licensees.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because that's one of the yielding powers. I would think almost if you're like the National Association of Broadcasters and you're someone that defends radio and television stations as, you know, basically lobbyists to say that as an industry, we need to speak on their behalf to do things that are beneficial to broadcast entities. I would go, and the argument I would make is you have all of these other entities that are major threats to traditional broadcasting. Now, FCC controls anything that goes over the airwaves. So television, radio, if it's broadcast out and you can pick it up on a tuner, then you got it. It doesn't control things like podcasts or internet YouTube video feeds or satellite radio, because it's different. So I would argue that what you're essentially saying is you're going to make it harder for us to compete if you overburden us by trying to put more restrictions on us. I would almost hope that the lobbyists for the broadcast entities would come out against this and do it strongly.
Yeah, no, and there have been some. I mean, the National Association of Religious Broadcasters, they've brought a lawsuit along. I mean, we've brought our lawsuit, NRB, or National Religious Broadcasters, they have their own lawsuit. So there are some, lobbyists who have come out in opposition to this. But this, I think, because of the way that, you know, the race is sort of tangled up in this, and the way the federal government has made this all about equity and sort of a part of the culture war, my guess is that the sort of mainstream lobbying organizations, they're a little bit afraid to get involved, and they think they can leave it to organizations like National Religious Broadcasters and my organization, the Pacific Legal Foundation, to strike this program down on their behalf. But they don't. They're, I think, choosing not to get directly involved.
Yeah, and that's why the lobbyists, like the National Association of Broadcasters, would be able to step in. I'm sure there's other organizations, farm broadcasters, things like that, that have pretty large lobbying groups that would be able to advocate for that. I mean, they're going through it right now with AM radio and trying to save AM radio and car dials. So, what's the next steps for something like this? Because I'm guessing this is a long battle, or do you think this is something that you have a play right away?
Well, I mean, we filed our lawsuit. As I mentioned, other organizations have also filed lawsuits. The next step is just to see what happens. Now, these lawsuits have been filed at the Federal Court of Appeals, actually in Texas. It's the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, and they're all pending before that court right now. You know, briefing has begun. I actually think there's a decent chance there will be some sort of resolution of this in the next year or so. But I think we have a pretty good set of arguments. I think that the program really is unconstitutional, and I'm hopeful and optimistic that a court will ultimately strike it down, send the FCC back to the drawing board, and hopefully put this program away, back down for good, where it has been for the last 30 years.
Yeah, so at the Pacific Legal Foundation, what kind of cases do you normally take? Like, what are some other examples of things you've worked on?
Yeah, I mean, we do a whole variety of things. The Pacific Legal Foundation is a nonprofit, law firm, essentially, and we represent Americans pro bono challenging government overreach and abuse. I mean, I have a case challenging DEI statements. I have another case challenging excessive regulation of daycares and birthing centers. So we have a whole variety of cases. We have a property section where we make sure that the government can't come in and take people's property without just compensation. And we have a separation of powers group where we try to make sure that agencies can't just go and start making their own laws, that they have to follow the Constitution and follow Congress.
Yeah, we just had a big case up here in Michigan about takes during COVID. There's a couple of different business owners that made that argument. They said, well, you effectively told us we couldn't open our doors under penalty of prison. So that constitutes a take, meaning that you made us, you took our business from us, meaning we couldn't operate it. You legally told us we couldn't operate it. They took that to the Michigan Supreme Court and lost that one. But you see a lot of people, you know, they have grievances and real legitimate grievances with the government.
Yeah, I mean, and that's exactly the kind of case that, that I could see us potentially taking someday. I mean, that's the sort of thing that we do. If the government, if you're a business and, you know, government regulation is making it impossible for you to do your business, you know, if they've come in and they're acting in a very arbitrary manner, that's the sort of work that we do. We also fight for racial equality and we fight for people's ability to work in their chosen occupation. So we have a very sort of broad and varied practice fighting against government abuse. There's plenty of it to go around.
Wilson Freeman, again, if people want to look up your organization online, the Pacific Legal Foundation, where can they go?
Yeah, that's right. Just pacificlegal.org. That's us. You can find us on X as well.
Are you doing a lot of radio interviews about this?
Yeah, about this one in particular. This has been one that people are very interested in. I guess that's no surprise since they're all radio stations themselves. They're all licensees. They want to know how their business is going to be affected. And I'm more than happy to talk about this. I think it's a very important case.
Yeah, I think this is such a fascinating topic. In the back of my head, I thought, oh boy, boss isn't going to like bringing up the FCC on the airwaves because there's always a lot of risk when you bring up a government agency. But maybe that's the point. Maybe you shouldn't feel threatened by them. You know, action will be taken for criticizing one of their policies that you think is unjust. I think that should be the whole point. We shouldn't have to be fearful of retaliation. And you know what? This is the road they're going down. They could retaliate if things like this go through.
Oh, if they retaliate against you for my interview, please give me a call. I would love to represent you in that case.
Wilson Freeman, attorney for the Pacific Legal Foundation. Thank you so much for joining us here. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Ryan. Talk to you later.
All right, we got one more segment coming up. It is almost the weekend. The cut of the day coming up. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker. Filling in for Mark Reardon, we get another segment before we all go off into weekend land. Oh, will that be fun? Sue, I can't wait for this weekend. I'm going to wear my sweatpants jeans and go to my son's baseball game and see how that goes.
You classy individual.
I'm very classy. All right. It'll be fun. All right, let's do the cut of the day.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
So on CNN, I think sometimes they wonder, hey, why would anyone vote for Donald Trump? Like, they go into the assumption, and much like Howard Stern and some of these other people, that it should be standard protocol to have a disdain for someone that would vote differently than you. And I think CNN sometimes is perplexed because they think that they are this arbitrator of decency or arbitrator of, you know, what is best for you. So they don't understand when sometimes you see things differently than them. So CNN questions a Trump supporter. Let's listen to that clip.
What's your most important issue?
The economy, getting the interest rates down, getting it to where we can afford to live in America. Right now, it's too expensive.
Okay, now let me maybe ask like a slightly impolite question. But, you know, if you can afford a boat, you're not hurting so bad, right? Because a boat costs a lot of money and it's a lot of upkeep.
Listen, nobody gave me I earned everything that I've got. I'm retired military, retired power plant, and I am successful and retired and with boats, jet skis, because I did it right. And everybody has that chance. Whether they choose or not, that's up to them.
I would never try to take anything away from you in that way. But what I'm asking is, groceries are probably a smaller part of your budget than, say, you know, someone who's like a little worse off. I think it's interesting that people who are a little bit more comfortable are still so concerned about the economy. Do you see what I'm
because
saying?
Because I want my money to go further. I want inflation to go down. I want interest rates to go back down. I want all that. But that covers everybody in the economy. Not just me, not just the poor, not just the rich. It covers everybody.
Now, something I've heard from some people, tell me if this applies to you, is like they're worried their kids aren't able to afford a house or a car.
Well, I train my kids and taught my kids properly. They have great educations. And they're both successful in their careers. Actually, they're doing better than me.
Good. That should be the goal in life, honestly. You want your kids to do better than you. I think that's what most parents would say is the goal in life. And I listened to him, and I think about the reporter that is asking these sort of questions and how crazy of a question it is to go to someone and say, you look like you're able to afford groceries. So why is a bad economy that big of a deal for you? Because, you know, you look like you're, you know, nice plump. You're eating fine. You're probably going to go get a steak after this. I mean, you're rich. You can afford to shop in places other than Aldi. So what do you got to complain about? That's like the mindset of a CNN reporter.
Unbelievable.
That's And the guy answered correctly. I mean, he knew what his stance was on something like this. What do you think? Like, let's say they're going through and it was a Kamala supporter and CNN asked the same question, you know, some of your concerns. And they said, oh, the economy's a concern. And I think the CNN reporter would say something along the lines of, oh, don't worry, she'll take care of you when she's in office. Right. Kind of like, you know, hey, if you vote for Obama, we're going to give you Obama phone and we're going to give you food stamps. Or we're going to give you this and that. I'll never have to pay for a thing ever again. Remember, they would go onto the street and that was the impression they had about Barack Obama.
Oh, yeah.
Everything will be taken care of in my life. Maybe that's what they feel like. If you're someone that's voting for Kamala Harris, everything's great now and things will continue to be great because everything will be taken care of. Maybe that's the mindset of the people that are going to vote for.
And that woman, the reporter, doesn't care what she cares about. No one but the fact that she can afford it, then it's okay.
I know you can afford it. It's fine.
Yeah.
That what a concept that is, right? I don't know about you, but man, just going back during the pandemic, I know prices started to rise because there was this scarcity. Like, oh, man, it's hard to find toilet paper. So they jack prices up on things like hand sanitizer or whatever. But all things considered, the prices they jacked up to are still cheaper than they are today. That's the sad thing.
Jeez.
The surge of people. Okay, a couple of other stories I wanted to get to really quick. I like Elon Musk. I don't like his products. I don't think I'd buy a Tesla. I would definitely not buy a Cybertruck. I think the Cybertruck may go down as the worst made American vehicle of all time. So the Tesla Cybertruck has all kinds of issues. But when I read this story, I was all on board. I was like, okay, I'm back onto the Cybertruck bandwagon. So apparently you get these warlords that can afford to buy these American vehicles that aren't sold anywhere other than America. They get them transported and shipped to their country. And a Chechen warlord took the Cybertruck and mounted a machine gun onto the back of it. Okay, so he's going around and he's using this to fight on the front lines. And Elon Musk found out about this and they disabled his truck remotely.
Oh,
so it's
I love
a brick.
It. I love it.
That's awesome to me. I love that too. That's the way it should be. So, you know, I'm not someone that would ever purchase one. I think they're overpriced and terrible vehicles. They have a factor to it that's kind of cool. Like if I see one, almost like if there's a helicopter in the sky, you stop and look. You see a Cybertruck, you're like stopping and looking at
that
thing.
Oh, for sure.
Like, oh, that thing's cool. I just wouldn't invest my own money in it. But when I read the story that he has the ability to do this, one, yeah, I'm sure he can do that to other individuals arbitrarily, which isn't
sure.
great.
Yeah.
But the fact that he's using it on warlords that are going out there to use it for harm and he can prevent that from happening is pretty awesome to me. I just think that's
Agreed.
Great.
Agreed.
All right, Sue. Luckily, I'm wearing the dress slacks right now because I'm in the office setting. As soon as I get home, I guess you can imagine what I'm going to be into. I do owe you a picture, which I think I need to find.
Yes, please.
And if you wanted to know, I think I got them at Burlington. So if you're ever in the market for sweatpants jeans, that's where I think where you'd be able to find them.
Yeah, that's not going to ever happen. But thank you.
Oh, it was so fun working with you the last couple of days. These are always good. Is Mark back on Monday?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If people want to find me online, Ryan Recker Radio, you can find me right on there, at Ryan Recker on Twitter, a couple of different places. Everybody have a great, great weekend. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
All right, parents, it's back to school time, and I've got a secret for you. There's a drama-free way to make vitamins part of your kids' morning routine. Little Critters Gummy Vitamins. You see, my kids think they're just eating fun, delicious gummy bears, but little do they know, they're getting essential nutrients for their health and development.
Mom, we know they're vitamins.
As I was saying, kids absolutely love, and apparently know, these are vitamins. Little Critters is the pediatrician-recommended kids' multivitamin gummy brand, and the yummy way to start the school year.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts!
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.